Black Lives Matter. At the Dropped Again podcast, we wholeheartedly support the Black Lives Matter movement. As individuals of color ourselves, we are allies to our Black brothers and sisters. The time for change is now.
Oh dear.
It's a straightforward catch. Catch you'll see in the playground. A 10-year-old, 11-year-old will catch that and up with their eyes shut.
There it goes. Dropped it again. Can you believe that?
3, 2, 1. Let's do this. Welcome to Dropped Again, episode number 5. Can't believe we're already at 5 episodes. This is amazing. I've got to bring in my guy, Shady. How you doing, big guy?
I'm doing okay, man. My wife, man. Let me tell you this story. I have this leather couch on my balcony. It's a leather couch. It's a high quality, but it's like part of a sectional. So this couch, right? About a year ago, super nice couch. My buddy's like, yeah, this is an amazing couch. It'll fit right in your place. Let's get it. So, okay, boom. We get the U-Haul. We get the truck. Me and him on a given day, go to this guy's house. We get it. It's already in two parts, right? So we just load it up. It was raining. So we're like, oh, fuck. We got to load this thing up. We bring it to my building. We go to start loading it in the elevator. We can't get the service elevator. So we're lugging this thing up the stairs. It's huge. We get it into my apartment. We try to set it up. We realize, dude, this thing is for a mansion. Like, we have a one-bedroom apartment. The couch was the size of the whole apartment. We couldn't even function, like, anyway going in there with this couch. We go into to get this thing out of the – or into our my apartment, and we find out that this thing is too big. So we take the one sectional part of it. We put it outside on the balcony. I'm like, yeah, leather couch, amazing on the balcony. And the big thing, we go and we just throw it out because we're like, dude, we can't take it back. We had to get the U-Haul truck back in time, whatever. Anyway, fast forward now. My wife wants to set up the balcony nice with the patio stuff, everything nice. So she's like, and this couch. So dude, for the last 2 days, she's been pestering me to get this couch out. So I'm like, sure, let's do it. If you got to help me. She's like, I didn't bring it in, so I'm not taking it out. So she's like, you got to figure out how you're going to get this thing out. How are you going to get this thing out? And buddy, it's just been eating at me. So anyways, she threatened me, no golf tomorrow if I don't get it out of there. So I got my buddy. We're getting it out tomorrow. It's going to happen. And she can have her peace and quiet and everything's good. I'll be on the golf course. And that's my story because you know, it's been bugging me but she's a good lady. She's a good lady.
That's all it took was the threat of no golf for you tomorrow. And they know how to pull at the heartstrings.
I feel like taking this fucking couch and punting it off my balcony. Fucking huge. It can rain, storm, sun, fucking, when I sit on it in the winter, buddy, like the ice breaks as I sit on it.
The fact that you have a leather couch on your balcony is enough. Well, there you go. That's a great way to start this episode. An immature start to the episode for an immature show, because this week we're talking about under 19 stuff. So what a great start that is.
Yeah, it's all the same for me, man. I'm always having fun with stuff. Under 19 stuff is amazing, man. I leading up to this, I actually did a little bit of research and spoke to a few people about it. So I got a few stories that I kind of remember and we'll get into that as we go. But under 19 days for me, man, like, it was awesome. I love those times. You know, you're young, you're playing so much cricket, you're practicing so much, you're fielding, diving around so much, whether it's cold, whether it's raining. So those are the days.
I love it, man. I mean, for me, definitely the highlights of my cricketing career were my under 19 days, not just the cricket itself, but the fact that you have no worries in the world. All you're doing is playing cricket. I mean, you're going to school, but it's high school. So who really gives a shit. And then what you're looking forward to is playing cricket in the evenings, on the weekends, you're always playing cricket. And the best part about it is you get to go on some of these amazing tours, whether it's the Caribbean, got to go to New Zealand, Dubai. I mean, you're all over the place. You're traveling as a 18, 17, 19-year-old. Doesn't get much better than that. I mean, for you, you got to go to Bangladesh. So a little bit of a trade-off. I'll take New Zealand over Bangladesh for a World Cup.
Yeah, you got me there for sure. Bangladesh was an experience where, you know, you've got army guys around you all the time and there's all this, you know, hoopla around it. It was a big deal because cricket's huge in Bangladesh, man. Like, massive. Like, I mean, they've done really well over the years, and this is 2004. So this is like post 9/11, and it was a crazy experience, man. Like, I remember the opening ceremony, the stadium was full to the max. And then we played Bangladesh in Chittagong in a packed stadium when we played against them. Someone got a 5-wicket haul in that game. Oh yeah, that was me. So that wasn't too big of a deal. And then we went and also were in a part of Rajshahi in Bangladesh, which is like real small town sort of village stuff where I think me and Abid both had the coronavirus.
And that's not something to joke about, man. We're not going to joke about that. But you guys were very sick in Bangladesh. We're going to get into that in just a second. I want to take it one step back. So as I mentioned at the top, we're talking under-19s today. We're going to talk about our experiences in playing under-19 cricket. Obviously, we've both been very lucky to make a World Cup and be a part of an under-19 World Cup. We've also been on the other side where, we didn't make the team or we missed out on the chance to go to a World Cup, and that heartbreak, which for me obviously made me want it a lot more. And the second time, it just made me even more grateful for being there. And then we're going to lead into that. It's just some of the gaps that we have within the under-19 structure as well, where it completely drops off after 19. I mean, you really don't have any support system. And then I know for you, somebody who was playing competitive cricket and good level cricket, it took a while to break into that national squad. So we're going to get into all that. But before then, I want to start talking to you about, talk to me about the tryout process and the trials that you had to go through at your under-19 journey.
We had this thing called the Canada Cup, and it was under-19 teams from BC, Manitoba, Alberta, Quebec. Ontario had A and Ontario had B. And I think I played in two of those. The first Ontario or Canada Cup that I played in, I was a walk-on to the Alberta team. So I was living in Toronto, and I can't remember. Someone told me, like, yeah, just show up there that day and maybe one of the teams are short or whatever. I think it was like Jeff Thomas or Leroy, like one of those links where they're like, but nobody knew me. I didn't know any of the Ontario guys, like junior under-19 cricket, because the reason why is because I only played Ismaili for my dad's team. So I'd never been in the junior circuit, right? And I'm still playing hockey at this time. So I played for Alberta, dude. And the first game we played against Manitoba, and they were like the weakest team. So Alberta won, whatever. And then in the second game, like, so I think we had a practice or a little fielding session, and the coach kind of saw me, and then I got in the second game. Dude, I was the second in the tournament in wickets, playing one game short for Alberta. I miced up all the Ontario guys, Ontario B. So that was another thing for me that boosted me up. And based on that tournament and those stats that I delivered, I should have been playing in that 2002 World Cup. There was a guy who finished first in the wickets. Like, dude, I finished second in the tournament wickets. So I'm like, okay. And, you know, I was backing myself, feeling myself a little bit, that they didn't pick me. So they ended up taking some guy from Manitoba. And I know how Canada Tours are always filling in those political spots. Oh, yeah. Shady said that. Yeah, yeah. You're always filling a political spot with somebody from out of province, wherever it's from. Not saying all the best guys are from Ontario or whatever. Like, there's been some great guys from here and there and everywhere. But that was always a stipulation in selection for under-19 national selection and national selection.
Yeah, we had the same thing. I mean, for our under-19 team, there was a couple of guys from out west. A couple that were justified for sure. I mean, somebody like Manny Olak comes to mind. Great bowler, definitely justified his spot. And then there's a couple others that you're like, well, what are you really doing here, right? And one in specific, I remember, didn't play a single game on the entire tour. And that didn't turn out too well. There was a little bit of an altercation at the end of that. I'm sure we'll get to. We had the same thing. We had a Canada Cup. Ours was great. It was in Winnipeg on matting wickets. I think it was artificial or something. The reason I remember that is because for the first time, I think I was 16 or 17 at the time, we got to stay in a hotel in Manitoba for a week all together. And that's the best times, man. Being with your teammates in a hotel, just some of the shenanigans. And the hotel that we stayed at a full water park. It had an indoor water park in it. So we took great advantage of that. We went out, got to know Manitoba and Winnipeg really well, got to know the natives there really well as well, which was wonderful. And then the cricket was mediocre to say the least. I mean, we played 5 games in 5 days. We were there for 5 nights, 5 days, and we played a game every single day, round robin style. I pulled up with an injury in game 3. I had a 5 already, and then in my 7th over, I pulled up a hamstring against BC, and that was the end of my tour. So I just had to relax for the rest of the couple of days. It was a great experience, but like I said, some players just, you're wondering how they made the team.
You're absolutely right. I think with the Canada Cups though, it really gives like, you know, in the last episode, like you could see a cricketer, you know, and I think when those Canada Cups are there, like you just know right away, because in Canada, like there's not so many guys playing. So like this broad spectrum of talent is really not that big. So like when you see a guy who, whatever, from another province or in Ontario, like guys stand out. So like I was always one of those like guys who thought like, dude, like, it's not that hard to see like who the best guys are. Like even like, not even, I'm not like, league cricket is fine, whatever, but at the next level, you know what you need to do and you need to be able to field. So I don't know if Canada ever took that as the first consideration of thing. Now they have fitness tests and all that. Like back then, man, those, a lot of guys are not passing what the fitness test requirements are now. Again, you know, a lot of the guys also perform, so it's a different era and stuff. So I also feel that. But yeah, the under 19 stuff, like those Canada Cups were awesome. There was so much passion and so many battles that went on there. Yeah, obviously being able to stay in the hotel. And you guys ever do like the running races with the bare feet in the hotel? Why is it in a hotel room with your bare feet? You feel like you're so fast, eh? Like I used to just love racing in the hotels in bare feet.
That was the best thing, man. You get in the hallway. And I think we got into trouble over noise complaints or something, because we were doing them late at night, like 10:30, 11. And, you know, in Winnipeg, that's late at night. So we got into some real trouble because of that. But yeah, you feel like you're the fastest thing in the world. I think somebody knocked their head against a wall because they thought they were going fast. And just, you know, on your bare feet on the carpet, you just can't slow down in time. Boom, straight into a wall.
Hey, how many guys went swimming with their shirts on? Hey.
I can't remember. There's probably a few.
anyways, man. I love that. Okay.
So from the draft process, obviously now, you know, we were both lucky enough. You didn't make the 2002 team. You made the 2004 team. Tell me about the qualifiers. Like, I mean, that's kind of your first step, right? Is you go through a under 19, a regional qualifier. For us, it was the first time I played, it was the US, Bermuda, Cayman Islands, the Bahamas, bunch of random teams. Was it the same for you guys? You guys had a Canada Cup, like a regional qualifier?
Yeah. And for that one, like we dummied everybody, like just crushed them, like Argentina. Like we had a really strong team. I remember in the final though, I think, or the game. Yeah. Like not the final. Like I think it's like whoever had the most, whatever points or whatever went through. So like we just had to beat Bermuda, I guess. And Kazi's a guy from the league. He played, he was an under 19, like we were all convinced he was at least 30. Yeah, who knows, right? But yeah, he definitely looked older and he was the cha-cha of the team. And I remember him just lighting it up that day. Like he was walking down the track, halfway down the track, and before the bowler was bowling, and just doing some crazy antics. And man, that guy brought such a spark to our team. And his character was fantastic, man. I have a lot of respect for that guy. And so he, I remember him obviously just smashing Bermuda, and we qualified, and it was awesome. We ran onto the ground and it was amazing. And then obviously into the 2004 World Cup in Bangladesh. And then on Kazi's thing, we had a lot of expectations with him, and the poor guy, I think he had like four ducks in a row. Like, our batsmen, like our top batsmen, like we had a good team, man. We had Trevin, Gavin, Kazi, Karun Jetty. So guys who were performing, and just like, I think in the Canada Cups, like the Canada Cup before that, I think I was playing in the Ontario A team, whatever. But I remember our team was so strong that I didn't bowl and I didn't bat. So like I was just a number 10, like floater guy. I think I was already like in the team, whatever. I was one of the senior leaders or whatever in the team. I don't know about leaders, but definitely in the team.
Glue guy. You were a glue guy.
Yeah, I'm always the glue guy. And it was awesome being in that moment, being able to play with my cousin Abid, who I'd say Abid and Jasjeet Mangat, Hira, you know him as also. I think those two guys are probably the top like batsmen in terms of technique and just elegance and how easy they made it look. And I know that Abid got to show his talents finally in the World Cup in Bangladesh, because they hadn't been picking him for a few years before that. And he he was the top run scorer in, for us in the tournament, and he missed two games with the Bungla virus. Is that better?
That's better. I like that one. I like that
because we were fucking fucked.
But see, we spoke a little earlier about the guys from out of town, as we Torontonians, TND Ontario guys like to call it, the out of towners. But Abed was one that obviously it was his performance stood out in the World Cup, right? He was able to perform in the World Cup, made some runs even after being sick.
And he didn't even like, he wasn't even going to make the team, man. Like that's how, like, you know, the selection back then, like, he was in the Nets. Like he lived in Alberta, Calgary, but then he was just living in Toronto with us. Like we went to India, and I'll get a story coming up about that as we go on, and how we went to India to train before this World Cup. But he almost didn't even make the team, buddy. Like we're in India, like this guy, we're in the Nets in the indoor. Like he's just like, he's just good. Right. He's like, he's just so much, like, he's just good. So it's like, dude, how are you not picking this guy? And that had a lot to do with the Toronto politics, because everybody from the Toronto, like they wanted to make the team, and Abed didn't even play under 19 leagues. Like him and I didn't even play that, man. Soham was another one. I think he didn't even bother with that after a while. I'm not sure, but
It's interesting because, you know, for me coming up in the under 19s, I didn't play a single game in the under 19 level cricket. I played under 15s when I was younger, and then straight into like men's cricket and adult cricket. It was, as long as you're playing at the top level. I mean, I'm not going to go at 8:30 to play a morning game and then go play a men's game. I love cricket, not that much where I just want to, and at that time, not driving, taking my brother all across town to be like, take me to this game, then take me to that game, like some people do. So I didn't play under 19 cricket, but I played obviously at the top level for the Toronto Cricket Club. And we had a similar scenario. There's a couple of guys from out west that I mentioned, Manny Olak, another one that's from out of town, but Zane Mahmood from Ottawa was a great bowler for us as well. So if you're good enough, you're going to stand out no matter what crowd you're going to be in. If you have the talent, if you have the ability, if you have the work ethic, you should be able to stand out. The problem comes is when those guys, you know, the ones that just made it on their political basis, because they also stand out like a sore thumb, because you know they're not good enough to be in the team. They stand out just as much as the guys with the talent.
Yeah, that's always tough, man. But I think once you have like the team, like it's always tough when you know you're carrying a few guys, but you know, like the 11 on the field that day, and you would hope that going to a World Cup, and I think you know, you want to give yourself a chance to win. But we had, like, on our World Cup, we had a guy from Quebec, Krunal Patel, awesome guy, like just quiet guy, like just really good team guy. And then we had another guy named Simon. He was from BC, another just good guy. Like we had a really close knit team, and then we had an awesome coach. Like, so our coach was Franklin Dennis. He's a legend. I think he's in the Canada Cricket Hall of Fame. Like, where is that, downtown somewhere?
I have no idea. Is that even a real building?
No. He was a ledge. He got in as the coach before the World Cup, because we had Jeff Thomas was earlier on, and then Rupert Gomes took us to Guyana, and Rupert Gomes. Oh man, what an awesome dude. Swagger. Oh jeez. Anyway, Franklin Dennis. So funny story. So Franklin Dennis, legend, man. He understood all the players. He understood me, kind of let me be free and to be my personality. So I really enjoyed it with him. So first game of the World Cup, 2004 World Cup, guys. Bangladesh, boom. First game, who are you guys playing? Australia. Oh my God. 2004, Australia is everything in cricket, right? So Bennett King's their coach. They got Tim Payne in the team, Stephen O'Keefe. They have their, you know, bowling coach, drills, batting drills, this drills, everything going on. So we get onto the field, you know, we're starstrucken in terms of, not even starstrucken at their players and their setup. Yes, they were wearing Cricket Australia colors. And yes, I wish I had a Cricket Australia shirt, but we didn't. So we had Franklin Dennis, who called us into a huddle to get us going, we thought, right? No, wrong. Franklin Dennis told us that, boys, we forgot the bag at the hotel room, so we don't have any equipment to warm up with, but we're going to stretch in a circle. So I thought, okay, here we go. Some of the guys, man, they just like kind of walked off and went upstairs. I thought, oh man, I think that's probably the right thing to do, instead of stretching in the circle. Cause there was a little bit of, you know, obviously it's a World Cup winner. So we were a bit like, damn, that sucks. But we ended up working it out. And obviously, I think even for him, he was probably more nervous than us, right? Coach of a World Cup. And when he came in, he had to do all the press and all that stuff. And it's not really, wasn't that familiar for them guys. And we had Leroy Gray as the manager. So they were definitely a dynamic duo, to say the least. But we had a fantastic time with them. Like, shout outs to Frank Linnetti. He's still around. He's still in cricket, still in West Indian Cricket Club. Huge shout out to West Indian Cricket Club, man. That's a club that has stayed the same since I was in the game. So when I came in the game, same guys, same support staff, always about juniors and building them up, and those juniors stay in the club. Huge shout out to them. Franklin Dennis had a huge part of that. So culture and being a part of something was what he had us buy into, and we bought into that, man. He was awesome. Like, he was cool. No dramas, apart from a little mistake.
So that was your first game of the World Cup. My first game of the World Cup was, I wouldn't say similar in that it was that the coaches forgot the bags or the warm-up gear. It was similar in the fact that I arrived in New Zealand at 3 a.m. in the morning. We had breakfast at 7, and the game started at, I think it was 10:30, something along those lines. It was a day game, so you got to get there early. So we got to be at the ground for about 8:30. I took a 25-hour trip from Toronto to Christchurch, New Zealand. Landed at 3 a.m., got something to eat, probably fell asleep around 4, wake up around 6:30, go down for breakfast, get all my gear around 7:30, jump into a bus at 8. Now we're warming up, and I'm warming up. Toss has happened. I'm bowling in warm-ups, and to this point, I still don't know if I'm playing or not. So I'm warming up. I'm with the therapist. Because obviously, I mean, you're sitting in a plane. I had the middle seat because I literally booked the flight the day of. And then that same night, you're flying out. So I booked the flight. And we'll get into the story as to why I landed there in the first place on the day of. But you're sitting in a middle seat for 25 hours. Your body's going to be pretty tight and stiff. So my hamstrings, and I had weak hamstrings to begin with, they were tight. And so the therapist is working away, massage, gels, putting some tape on just to make sure like these can last the day. I still don't know what I'm playing. So literally the tosses happened, we're batting. And at that point, I had to be the one to go and ask. And we had two coaches at the time, Wilbert Plummer and Farooq Kermani. I went up to Plummer and I'm like, hey, am I playing? Like, what is going on here? And at that point they were like, yes, you're playing. Of course you're playing. And I'm like, okay, thanks. Obviously, it was a great game for us because we ended up beating Zimbabwe. I had a little paddle scoop off the 50th over to get us a boundary, and then I took a wicket in that too. But it was the first game in which Canada won a game in the actual World Cup, not the plate, but the actual first round of the World Cup. So that was a momentous achievement for us, and doing it in the first game. But yeah, not an ideal start to your World Cup campaign and landing the night of, or the morning of, the actual game itself.
Yeah, man, that's rough, man. I know the story, and I know you're going to share it here. We'll kind of dig into that a little bit. But yeah, you guys were the first team that won, under-19 team that won a game in the World Cup, and to beat Zimbabwe was amazing. I remember following along with that. You guys are obviously younger to me, so I thought that was fantastic and amazing. Our under-19 World Cup, we didn't win any games. I thought we were probably competitive in a few. One obviously against Bangladesh, where we were only defending 140 or something like that, but we got it pretty close. I had a five wicket haul. So there's a funny story. So my cousin Abid in that game and always fielded in first slip. I always had a first slip when I was bowling. And in that game, like, they had a good start. So they were like 40, 50, whatever. So I came on early, as I think I usually would, whatever, to try and get in there and see what can happen. And I got a few breakthroughs early, and then we're off and running. So Abid and I had that connection, sort of off spinner, and then the first slip, and we sort of had the banter going. So I had this like quicker ball or whatever. So it was basically just holding it cross seam and firing it in as fast as I could. So every time that he wanted me to kind of deliver this ball, he would be chirping, you know, he's like, come on, he's like, get some dust on it, right? He's like, get a little bit of that zubber dust on it, whatever. So I was like, oh, I'm like, okay, cool. So that was our code or whatever, right? So some of the guys like in our team, whatever, they're like, what's this zubber dust stuff? Like, what is that? Like, is that, what kind of dust is that or whatever? So I'm like, dude, I'm like, let's not even fucking tell them like the joke or whatever, like behind the scenes joke. So the behind the scenes joke of that is there's this guy, a smiley guy, so who used to play with my dad or whatever, but he also plays in the league. So his name's Iqbal. Everyone knows Iqbal from the league, Iqbal Kasamali. He has a big, nice record in the league, left arm spinner, whatever. So Iqbal, nicest guy in the league. Everyone knows him, right? He'll always give you the two-hand handshake. You know, when someone gives you the two-hand handshake, it's like, buddy, like fucking, this is awesome. Like, lots of respect. So he's one of those guys. He always like pumps up his team or whatever, right? So like to get something going, right? To get something going, like get some energy going, whatever. Like, you know, he'll all of a sudden he'll just yell out, right? Like, Zubber Dust, yeah. You know, so me and Abid, so when we're younger, we just like fucking used to love that, right? It was real passionate. So we ended up using that as a code name. And when we needed a little bit of energy or a little, you know, like to calm nerves or whatever, we used to have that joke. So anyway, so I have a four wickets or whatever. And Abid calls for he's like, get a little Zubber Dust on this one. You know, this guy's playing whatever, cross the line or whatever it was, right? So get some Zubber Dust on this. I'm like, all right, fine. So I fling this one, buddy. The guy nicks it. Abid takes this screamer over his head. Like he's in first slip as an off spinner, right? He takes this thing overhead. So we run and just the big celebration. And we just both yelled out, you know, Zubber Dust, yar. So to this day, dude, like, okay, so that's like, what's that, like Urdu?
I mean, it's Urdu, it's Hindi. Zubber Dust just means like wonderful or great job.
Yes.
Or like well done. That's all it means. So wait, are your teammates from the U19 World Cup finding out what Zubber Dust actually is right now, listening to this podcast? Is that what's happening, or do they actually know now?
Imagine so, yes. And like, I'm like, dude, a lot of guys probably wouldn't even remember that. It's like such a small little thing, but like, for me and then the guys who know Iqbal, so there's some guys right now who are probably still dying, dude, because Iqbal, he's a character. Like, that's the guy you want in your team. Like, you know what? You know, in a cricket team, like, there's always guys, you know, they're a little bit more friends than the others. And then, like, the guy will, like, hit a six or whatever, and his buddy will jump out of the chair, like, well, good shot, yar! There's always a guy like that and a friendship like that within the teams. And oh man, that's the banter you love about cricket. And that was such a moment, man. Like I took five wickets in that game. I was the man of the match and we were buzzing, bro. Like we got fucking, I think they added like three extra coolers of Pepsi in our bus. I was signing autographs after this media session. Like, dude, it was unreal. So never forget that. And that's just a funny story from there. And you know, sometimes you just got to sprinkle a little bit of Zubber Dust on that ball and you never know what happens.
So, I'm sure those Versace shades didn't come off all night that night. They're on, you're doing interviews, you're doing pressers, you're doing everything. So Zubber Dust.
I had, I had the Versace shades, I had the diamond earrings, buddy. I was like, hey, man, I was just kind of who I was, you know, and that's what I ran with. And that confidence was probably what gave me most of my success as an off spinner, because you know, yeah, it was okay, whatever. But I think it was just me chirping guys and getting into them. They just wanted to hit me or throw them off their game a little bit. And I think that had a lot to do with my craft as a bowler then, and probably even now.
Absolutely, man. Mr. Hale used to always say, "You got to look good to play good." So, and whatever that means to you, Tiger, you got to look good to play good. So I love it. But before you actually went to the World Cup, I mean, phenomenal experience in the World Cup itself. Obviously, taking the fifer. In knowing you and having conversations with you over the last couple of years, I know you attribute a lot of that to the time that you spent in India before you actually went to the U19 World Cup. To those that don't know you as well, and obviously that haven't heard from you in terms of that story, tell them a little bit about how that came to be and then the preparation and kind of what that entailed in terms of your preparation for the World Cup in India.
Yeah, so India was an opportunity that we as in Abid and myself got through Sunny Jethi, Karun Jethi. Sunny played under 14s in that for Delhi, and his uncle out there and his aunt, whatever. So they put us up as well. And so we went and started training with the LB Shastri Academy, which is Sanjay Bardwaj was a coach, whatever, big coach in India, and guys like Gautam Gambhir and Amit Mishra, those were his sort of two top guys at the time. And we also were a part of the Sonnet Cricket Club or Cricket Academy with a guy called Tarek Sinha, who was the women's India coach at that time. Then their club is bigger. Like there was Akash Chopra and Ashish Nehra, Shikhar Dhawan, guys like that. For me, like, yeah, like the success I had in the World Cup. And then even like before, like, so we were in Guyana before we went to India, and Sonny and myself, like we took a lot of wickets on that tour, and I had a lot of success on that tour. I had a 5 for against Barbados and some other like pretty decent performances. So cricket was definitely in the forefront there. And then obviously we qualified for the World Cup. So India was a chance to go and practice, and you know, like what's cricket about overseas in the subcontinent, because we were going to play in Bangladesh. So it was awesome to be able to go and do that. The lucky part for me was like, dude, after 3-4 weeks there, I was lucky enough, or whatever I did, I was one of the bowlers in the net bowling to Gautam Gambhir alongside Amit Mishra and a few Ranji guys who, to be honest, I don't even remember their names. And I was a consistent sort of bowler in those nets. And I thought that was an experience, obviously. And I'm talking like bowling at the guy for like 3 hours, pretty much 4 times a week, right? Amit Mishra, awesome guy, like nicest guy. So we're bowling alongside each other. You wouldn't really get to talk much with Gautam because he's batting, right? So, and then the coach sits behind, and very kind of cool, right? So, and the respect that he got, like those kind of guys give the coaches there and all that stuff, and that culture, I kind of really, really took to and wanted to always show the coach that I was doing something. So I learned a lot, obviously, man, like you're playing with top players, and then obviously at the other academy as well. So that experience to India and playing with those guys was, whatever it was, luck, or I think, you know, they kind of liked the way I was fielding and stuff like that. And I guess they saw me as being someone different. Like I had tattoos and that same fucking shaved head and those same earrings, man. I'll tell you that for free. And everyone was looking at me like, at that time, no one had a tattoo. Like I think Sehwag might have had that like Om tattoo or whatever. Like I don't even know if any of the, so like, dude, they were, you know, they were really like, what's this guy about? And I guess it was just an opportunity that I took advantage of.
You might have started a trend, because if you look at the Indian team now, you look at Hardik Pandya, Virat Kohli, KL Rahul, Dhawan, everybody's got tattoos all over. So I think it might have been you that started the trend there with some of the boys.
All right. So I got to just on that topic, I got to bring up this story, man, because you reminded me of this story about tattoos. So whatever, I'll make it quick. So we're in Sri Lanka. I'm in Sri Lanka, and we would frequent this pharmacy, like a grocery store or whatever, but we always used to go down this escalator, and there was these like Sri Lankan girls or whatever there, right? So one day I'm going down there, and the girl comes up, like whatever, I'm wearing like a hoodie, whatever. So one of the girls comes up and she's like,
So I'm hearing you're having the big tattoo.
So I'm with Jason Sanders. So Jason Sanders, this Punjabi guy, whatever. And then I'm with Trevin, I think, as well. And so Jason Sanders starts bursting out laughing. I'm like, what's wrong with this guy? Like, what is he doing? Whatever. And then I'm like, sorry, what was that? And she's like,
I'm hearing you're having the very big tattoo. Trevin has told.
Jason Sanders is like laughing. So I'm hearing that she's saying you're having the very big tattoo. Dude, like, that story right there is one of the like greatest, fondest stories of all time.
You were getting hit on in Sri Lanka for your tattoo.
Yeah, no, it was a very colorful tattoo. I just like the colors.
Oh, man.
So back to where were we there, bud?
We're talking about India. We're talking about India and just preparations for World Cup. So obviously you had a good experience there. I mean, it was a little bit different for our, in terms of our World Cup, because we actually had, we had two tournaments to win in order to make the World Cup in 2010. In 2007, we lost to Bermuda, and Bermuda ended up going to the World Cup. And we were a solid team then. That loss is one that still haunts me to this day. Something that I think about often, because we should have made that World Cup. In 2009, they changed the structure a little bit. It was the first time that they introduced the World Cup qualifier, the global under-19 World Cup qualifier, which I think they've scrapped since then. So what happened was we played against the U.S., Argentina, Cayman Islands, Bermuda, I think, or it might have just been Cayman Islands, Bermuda, USA, something like that. Anyways, so we ended up, we won all our games. And then the top two teams, which is us and the United States, we went into a World Cup qualifier against eight other teams. So two teams from each region, two teams from the Asia Pacific region.
You win for free is what you're saying.
Well, what happened was it was like, okay, you win your region and some teams were pretty weak, but now two teams could qualify from a region if you were the strongest six globally, which was a lot better. So in that World Cup, for example, the United States and Canada both made the World Cup. We were undefeated against the United States, so that's one we can hold over them. That was sort of our preparation, because we had the World Cup qualifier, kind of like we spoke about the ICC trophy in one of the earlier episodes. It was like that, where nine other teams came to Canada. We had a 15-day tournament where you play each team once, and then sort of a round robin style, the top six teams make the World Cup. I think we ended up being third in that World Cup behind Afghanistan and Ireland. And then from there, they scheduled a tour for us, a 7-day tour to St. Kitts, in which then it was another preparation game. So we actually played two games against the West Indies under 19 team, Craig Brathwaite, John Campbell, Shane Dowrich. Jason Holder wasn't there, but he ended up being the captain of the under-19 team at the World Cup, and then kind of back to Canada indoors. And then we went off to the World Cup from there. So our preparation was more of a team style, and we had a great team in 2000 at the 2010 World Cup. I mean, you look at the names and the people that have represented Canada since then. You look at somebody like Hiral Patel was already playing for the national team. Ravindu Gunasekara playing for the national team, or had represented the national team. Nitesh Kumar playing for the national team at that time. Usman Limbada right on the edge, or if not playing for the national team at that time. Manny Olak, who also ended up playing for the national team. So the list goes on and on of individuals that had either represented or been playing for the national team at that time. So we had a solid team. And obviously I spoke a little bit about the first game that we beat Zimbabwe. But before then, to share a personal story about what actually happened in terms of the lead up to that game, so we're leaving on December 31st. On New Year's Eve, we're supposed to leave to New Zealand. The whole team is. On December 27th, we had a meeting where they introduced the new Cricket Canada bylaws to us, and we're supposed to sign right there, and then that's it. So we had a meeting upstairs. Meeting goes, I asked them a couple of questions around a couple of the policies. There were some curfews in place that had never been in place, and we'd been successful. There was things about staying off social media. There was things about a number of different things that we questioned. So that I questioned specifically. So I leave the team meeting. Everybody signs it, including me. I sign the bylaws, and I get downstairs, and we're at Causeway Sports. So we're at upstairs at Causeway Sports. We walk down the stairs, and now I get pulled aside by the team manager, and he goes, and they're handing out the team kit bags, which has your jersey number, your name, Cricket Canada on it. By Bass, get there, and they're like, well, you're not getting your bag today because your spot in the team is under review. Huh, interesting. The team's leaving in 4 days, so when are we going to know if I'm in the team or not? You'll know in due time. 2 days later, I'm still, at this point, I'm also training with a national team at the indoor facility. I don't know if you remember, it was SPG or SPC training up in Thornhill. We're doing that indoor training stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so we're doing indoor training stuff. And after training is done, I get a call saying, you will not be traveling with the under-19 team. Okay. I still remember this. I think it was Ash or somebody was sitting there, and I threw my phone, didn't know what to do, literally sat in the change room for about an hour and a half. I was the last person to leave. I was literally just sitting in the change room because I just couldn't muster up the words or the energy to know what was happening. Leave. Call Zubin, who is the player representative at that time in terms of the player committee. Zubin's like, well, let's see what happens. So the next day, in 2 days, the team's leaving. Now the team has left, and I still don't know what's going on. I went to the airport to actually see off the guys. I go there, see off the guys, and now we come back, and I receive an email in my inbox, and it's about a three-page long email, and it starts off by saying, The email is titled, well, it's allegations. It lists off everything that they have said that I've done wrong since 2007. They've spelled my name wrong in different occasions. So they call me Arsenal in some points, Arsenal in other points, Arcelin. So spelled my name and it was just a very poorly written. So I don't know who wrote this to this day, but whoever wrote it should have done spell check or grammar check or something. I mean, it's very easy. Get this email, and now it's a list of allegations, about 10 allegations all the way through. We were supposed to have a hearing, no hearing, respond via email. Wrote it a full response via email. And in one of the future episodes, we should probably read that email and read the responses, because I think it'd be quite funny and people should hear it.
And whoever did write that email
feel free to come on the show. We'd love to have you.
So I received the email from Rabin Murthy, but Rabin did not write the email because he literally copied and pasted the email. So I know it wasn't Rabin. So it was somebody else, but it was not Rabin Murthy. That's the only one that I know it wasn't. So anyways, I get this email now. I respond and I'm supposed to have a hearing. We're supposed to have a hearing, but no hearing takes place. They go, hearing will take place when everybody comes back from New Zealand. Until then, everything else is in the executive committee of Cricket Canada, which is at the time, Mr. Ajit Saini and Mr. Rabin Murthy, as stated in the email. So now I'm like, okay, well, what's the point of having a hearing after the World Cup if I'm going to miss the World Cup? That the whole point of this is, am I playing in the World Cup or not? I don't care about anything else afterwards. In the end, what happened was that email, we ended up having a meeting back again at SPG, the Sports Performance Group or the Sports Performance Center with Ranjit Saini. And he said, why did you write that email? All you had to do was apologize. And I said, why would I apologize for something that is completely false? Why would I apologize for something that I didn't do and just stand down and take your word for it? And being a Pathan and kind of that my character is something that, you know, I don't really stand down for anything that I actually believe in. But the most interesting part is 2 days later, it was the 10th, I get an email saying, we've decided that you can go to the World Cup. Here, reach out to this person to make travel arrangements. Get a call the next day saying, hey, you're not going to make it in time. So can you book your own ticket? Excuse me? The great story is my brother actually paid for my flight to the World Cup. I think it was $25,000 or $3,000, which at a time for somebody who's under 19 and a family, pretty decent chump change. I've not seen any of that money returned to this day. So that's the story of my journey to the under 19 World Cup.
And you probably also spent a few dollars on flowers for old Ranjit, eh?
More than a few flowers. I think he's heard enough of me over the years. I've given him a piece of my mind on more than one occasion.
Sorry, yar.
But yeah, so I mean, I don't know how much, just in terms of things, right? Like it kind of stays that if you don't fall in line, or if you don't fall within the system, we talked about politics earlier. If you're not willing to just drop your head, say yes, and be a yes man, well, they really do have the authority to take your hopes and dreams away from you. And they do take that away from a number of cricketers over the years. Under 19 cricket is special. It's a special place to be in terms of playing at the World Cup. And they've taken that away from a lot of people.
Yeah, and they're just kids at under 19 level. Like, you're, if you think about it like that, like obviously there's a code of professionalism that should be there. And I think, again, it goes back to that red culture versus blue culture within a meeting where you're given a professional document. I mean, minus the spell and the grammar check, and you're expected to sign that document. You have some legitimate questions that you ask, and like, that's perceived as being, what's the word, bro? Like,
we'll have to edit that word in after this podcast is done.
Something really, really good that just kind of describes how, you know, certain cultures look at you asking questions as being very, insert word now. But everyone obviously knows what I'm saying, and you obviously were a victim of that, and I'm sure there's been a lot of sort of victims of that sort of nature. There's so many instances that I can recall with other players and their suspensions and their issues, and then obviously I have my full bag, which is not for today's episode, because as an under 19 World Cup man of the match, Pfeiffer taking what I thought to be superstar, I came back and realized pretty quickly that not under 19 days are over. And that is probably the biggest hit to every under 19 cricketer ever. Like even like, I mean, now these guys, under 19 guys, are getting these IPL things, like, fuck, man, lucky bastards. That's the thing with the under 19 cricket, right? Like, everybody, they go on this huge hoop, and then all of a sudden, fuck, like, I got to go and like go to university, and like, what are my priorities? Like, what's next for cricket? I just played in a World Cup. There is nothing next. Back in the day, there was an under 23 program. There was such a structure to that. Go figure. You had a coach who was professional at that time and had built that structure within. And it was such an awesome segue to senior and national team cricket, or just fucking playing in the top division. Like, there has to be something said about a young guy, under 19 guy, who plays in the top division in the T&D. It's not shit standard. There's a lot of pros and overseas pros that have obviously been engulfed into our league over the years more and more. You know, that sort of hit for the under 19 guys is tough, man, because a lot of guys, they give up cricket from there. Like my cousin Abed, for example, he lived in Calgary, dude. So he just came off scoring runs in the World Cup, like did awesome. He could have played in Alberta and used the Alberta card to play for the national team. Easily. He went back to Calgary and he's like, dude, I'm not playing on fucking, like they have like these clay wickets back then. Like he's just like, dude, I'm not interested in that. Like the grass was high and he doesn't like or didn't like that kind of cricket and whatever. So he ended up not playing a game ever again. And you're talking about probably the biggest waste of talent in this country as far as talented batsmen, like guys who can dominate all kinds of bowling and top level bowling. So and again, the list is long for those kind of guys who give up. But I kind of see that as cricket's fun. Like you play it for fun. Like the compete, right? Like how many of us right now are missing compete level, man? Like I'm trying to get my wife to gamble with me and fucking connect four, man. Like I'm trying to beat some ass and connect four. Next thing you know, she's threatening me with golf. Like you can't go to golf. You got to take this damn couch out, and it's all happening, man. But that's the sad part for some, but I guess that's why you play it.
Yeah. And I mean, it's a little bit different now because guys are now getting opportunities. GT20 is around. Hopefully that sticks around. We've seen other tournaments fail. So I'm really hoping that one sticks around for some of the young guys to get exposure. The one thing that really bothers me is the young guys, and this partly has to do with that. There's no real club culture. And what I mean in that sense is if you go to other countries, you go to Australia, you go to England, there's their top level team, then there's their second team, their third team, their fourth team, fifth team, and you work your way up those levels. Guys now will just go to the team that they think they have the best chance at making, and they'll just go from club to club to club to club. I mean, there's guys out there that, I mean, they must have a separate house and room in their house just for the amount of jerseys that they've collected over the years. The idea is, but then you look at some other guys and some of the guys that are playing for the national team now, they don't even play in the top level of cricket in Canada or in Toronto for that matter. So you're starting to question that, but you're right in the sense that there is a huge drop. Wasn't really any support for some of the top level cricketers in our teams. If you weren't playing for the national team, well, too bad, you were kind of on your own. And I'm really hoping that that's now changed and you really start to emphasize that in terms of the growth of young cricketers.
You think that the GT20 will have any trials for like glue guys? Like, dude, I see some of the guys who got picked it for the GT20. I'm not a fucking hater, all right? But I looked at some of those guys and I'm thinking like, and I wasn't playing cricket, whatever, seriously for the last few years. I wasn't training and stuff. If I could just train and like hit a few sixes, like maybe you think like I could get in as a glue guy. Like I don't want to play. I just want to be in the mix. You know what I mean?
I mean, you'd be a number one pick for a glue guy is something that I'd say. You'd definitely be up there.
Let's get me in there first and then I'll try to give a good word to Yuvraj and these guys to try to get you guys in. So let me know, just DM us. And if you're interested in the GT20, shout out the GT20. I thought that was fucking cool, man, to bring these guys in and to bring the cricket in. The ground was really small. And one of the probably, I would say, top five stupidest things I've ever seen is have a 60-yard boundary with windows with glass. Who tried out for that fucking position?
Well, the thing was, and then how many balls were lost in that tournament?
Well, they were lost in the fucking biryani buffet that fucking right through the glass and right into the buffet. Like, you know how many buffets were ruined? Like I remember going and like just kind of checking in on each of those trailers, like any gulab jambus left there, bud? No, we just our tent just got smashed with a ball again.
I mean, but in terms of the players itself, some of those guys had enough gulab jambus as well, but in terms of some of the players itself, I mean, it was interesting because it's interesting to see how some of those players got picked as well. I mean, I won't go into names and won't go into any of that. We'll save that for some future episodes. I know there's some cricketers listening to this right now. We will be going in on some people in the next few episodes. I guarantee you that because we're very opinionated. And if you feel differently, please reach out to us on social media. If you want to have your say, we're more than happy to have you on the podcast and we'll give you a chance to speak.
Yeah. Like we're just putting out content and saying things kind of the way they are. Like it's our opinion. Like you don't have to agree with what we're saying. Like I'm more broad spectred with regards to like who gets picked. Cause that's the problem for me is like, I don't even see like the guys who are playing, they don't even play in the top division. So I'm like, who is this guy? Cause I'm watching the top division games. I'm trying to see like what the talent is out there. And then having said that, there's also some really good players that play in the lower division, because then it comes into that club culture stuff. So big shout outs to some of the guys, like, who's that leg spinner guy? He plays for Lords, played for Canada. He's my boy. He came and he bowls some good leg spin, man. And he played
Usman Ghani.
Is it Umer?
Umer? But Ghani. Umer. Ghani's the last name. I know that. Ghani's the last name. I don't know. I think it's either Usman, Umer, or Umer. One of those three. They might all be brothers and they might all be identical twins and they all play.
And is it, who is the guy who played? Is it Umar Akmal?
Oh, he got banned for 3 years, dude.
Oh, wow.
He did play GT20 last year.
I remember going to the game and I'm like, man, this guy is like, he was pretty huge. He looked unfit and probably was.
I think he was out there hunting for the biryanis just all right alongside you that day. He's purposely hitting it into the tent to see if they'll throw any away and just put it in his hotel room for him.
They were giving out booze like it was nothing. It was like all you can drink bars, and like that thing was unbelievable. I hope they do that again and do it the same way, just like protect the folks with some plexiglass, man.
My question is, how are they making money?
We'll have to get, there's a guy, like, now, you know, we're just joking around, we're having fun, obviously, like we want to try to get the GT20 organizer. Like, I know there's this guy and I'm sure a lot of them will be keen to come on, and we obviously want to like use it for your promotion or whatever, and you know, we're happy to facilitate that, of course, but like we want to kind of know. And I'm always looking at like the different details. Like, I'm not asking, oh, where did the GT20 first start from? Like, I don't know. No one cares. Like, I don't care about that. I want to know the little, like, small little details within. And I suppose we'll have to have a few more GT20s first before we get into more details about them. But it'd be interesting. And whatever, man. Either way, it's awesome for Canada cricket. The only thing that it doesn't bring or hasn't really brought, like the 2001 qualifier, grounds and like turf wickets to benefit the infrastructure of cricket in Canada. So you built this ground, whatever, like the smallest boundary in the world. Like, who's even playing there? It's so far. When is like the T&D has to sort of follow suit? Like, I know Mississauga and Brampton are having, like, the cities are building these grounds and stuff. So I'm also curious to know what that looks like, what, how come Canada cricket must be making money from this? Like, what's their plan for the infrastructure of our grounds? Because we still, you know, we still could use some better grounds, and there's so many rainouts every season when it's not even raining.
Well, yeah, it rained 2 days ago and you can't play on the ground. King City's like that. I mean, to call it straight out, King City, you can't, if it rains the night before, you might as well sleep in and have a big night out because you're not playing the next day in King City. Good luck.
When we qualified for the Under-19 World Cup, we had that tournament at King City, cricket at King City at that time. Like, I remember playing for Canada in 2008 or whatever, and Kenya came and there was a 4-day game. And I think Kenya scored 500 or 600 runs. Like, that thing, I remember just being a flat thing. And that, I still thank the heavens for being 12th man in that game, man, because those guys were on the field. Like, Canada was on the field for 2 days. It was plus 40. It was unbelievable, man. And I'm so happy I didn't play in that game, and I didn't play in many games though.
Yeah, you dropped for most games, and hence the name of the podcast. But no, man, I mean, there's plenty of games at King City that you can go back. It was really that after 2008 is where it really went downhill. If you remember, what was that tournament called, where it was Pakistan, Sri Lanka, Zimbabwe, Albarca T20 tournament.
Yes, yes, yes. I remember when that thing was going on. I was so excited. I thought they were going to build like another like Cricket Canada's Wonderland or something with all this Arab money coming in. Like, I thought like they're going to set up a little marina over there and everything, man. It was coming in hot and fans, and it was pretty intense. And there was obviously the international teams. Yeah, that was, I totally forgot about that, but that was at King City. And I think some of the stands are, maybe there's a couple like dudes like buried under there still, like, who knows, man. Like, those stands, That crushed King City, man.
Crushed.
That was like 4 years ago or whatever. Like, they're, all the cars are parking. Like, it was like whatever, man. Like, just for that, the infrastructure here has to improve. And But I know it's tough, man. I'm not trying to pretend that we're a thriving cricket nation. You know, there's no government support. You know, we're just at this stage, we're lucky we got that CERB money.
Look, I mean, I'm with you. The excuses are, there's plenty of excuses, plenty of things, but I think the main thing has to be that you got to want to improve the level of cricket and the level of play. We have to want, that has to be the number one priority, not get into these T20 leagues, not get into all that, not get as many followers on Instagram as we possibly can, although that's what we're trying to do because we're a podcast, is how can we get back on the global stage? How can we qualify for the next T20 World Cup? How can we qualify for the next ODI World Cup? If that's not the plan, if that's not the goal, which at times I do honestly think it's not. I think it's about how do we get more money into Cricket Canada. And I mean, people are going to argue it goes hand in hand, but the number one priority has to be the level of cricket. And I think that's what's gone down. I want to end up the podcast here, but in rounding up the under-19, in the under-19 times, I want to ask you a little bit about your first call-up. Because obviously, after under-19, it took you a little while before you cracked that national squad. Tell me a little bit about where you were when you got that first call up. Tell me a little bit about your emotions at that time. Do you remember it? Do you not remember it? Take me through your first call up to the national squad.
First of all, I was supposed to get called up in the national team in 2005. It was a red stripe tournament that I was supposed to be going on because I was already in Jamaica as the captain of the Americas under 19. I fucked up big time on that tour, made a big mistake and got suspended and a big write up. And I was blacklisted from Canada cricket for a few years. So, and that was to make the team as an off spinner. So over those years, I was very determined. I know I fucked up and I really wanted to work on my game, which I did. By 2008, I think it was, I really came into my own with batting and managed to get a few hundreds, sort of couple back to back and then whatever. So I think it was like 300 or 400 that year and 8 or 9 games, whatever. So it was cool because it was new for me and I'm dominating the league at that point. Like for sure, I felt strong. I was fit and it was my time. And I felt like I had earned that. And that's how I got, excuse me, called up to the national team in 2008. And my first tour was to Scotland and Holland. So it was conditions that didn't really suit me. Like I got the skin condition and not one for excuses and all, but like it does actually really fuck me up.
Wait. You're not one for excuses?
Well,
when it comes to weather and those things, you're definitely one for excuses.
Explain. So like I have this cold urticaria. So like if it's cold and damp, my fingers and my hands and my whole body gets covered in hives, like mosquito bites. So gripping and catching a ball is not so easy. But anyways, I'm a fucking pussy, whatever. So get to Scotland now, and that's my first call up, man. And it was an awakening. It was at a time where the team was stacked. There were guys who were supporting me and kind of supportive of me making the team based on the way I did it. So I think I had a lot of respect from the guys based on like earning my way into the side. But I fell into some of my same similar sort of behavior in those early tours and found myself dropped fairly quickly. I want to actually share a story about my first roommate. So there, this guy was new in the team at the time as well, and a real character. I hope we can get this guy on just for the jokes. Kuram Chauhan. Kuram Chauhan was my roommate. Casey is what he's known. And so this guy, you know, former Pakistan A player. Dude, the kit bag he had was a fucking green coffin. That was his kit bag, a green coffin with like newspaper clippings and pictures on the inside of it. So I go into my room. I never met the guy. He's in there and I see this green coffin open, whatever. And this guy standing there, dude, with the biggest V-neck like t-shirt, bright purple or whatever, with these ripped jeans. And dude, I was like, hey, and I'm like, hey, man. He's like, hello, I'm Casey. So he has this lisp, right? He's just, you light up, man. You look at this guy, you light up. So amazing guy. And I remember sort of walking in on him, not walking in, but like he's using the bathroom. And so he wears these big V-neck shirts, right? But within the V, like on his chest, so like there's no hair there, right? So there's hair there. So I'm like, fuck, man, this guy fucking decent body. Like he's pretty upper body, you know, built or whatever. And So he's on the phone, he's chatting or whatever, and then he comes off the phone and he takes off his shirt, buddy. Everywhere apart from the V has full hair. Everywhere, everywhere. Back, shoulders, everywhere. So right there, I was just dying, man. So right away, like I'm chirping him, like I'm chatting to him, like, dude, where are you from? And trying to find out as much, like, and he's so talkative and stuff, but oh man, like that guy. So anyway, so first practice, my first tour, first practice, Scotland, we're jet lagged as fuck. I'm taking a nap. We're taking a nap. We fall asleep. We have practice. This Khurram Chohan guy, obviously, it's not his responsibility. He's not going to wake me up, right? He's waking up. I don't know where he went, because it wasn't like overnight. This was nap time, whatever. I don't think I set the alarm even. Like, I think I literally dozed off. And you know, jet lag, it could fucking hit you, man. Next thing you know, bro, I wake up and like everyone's gone. And like practice is literally like 20 minutes into practice. First tour, eh? I'm panicking. I run out. Oh, where's this? Where's that? I told the guy. So I take a taxi, dude, all the way to fucking wherever this ground is. Like, dude, 100 euro probably gone. Took 45 minutes to get there by taxi. Get there. All the guys are practicing. And like, so there's guys in the team, Umar Bhatti. So Umar Bhatti was under 19. So he's just kind of shaking his head like, this fucking guy, man, like, you've done all that work to get on this team and you're fucking doing this kind of shit. So they were disappointed in me. And at the time I didn't really gather, like, they were all rooting for me to do well, 'cause I think I'd earned that. And obviously kind of fucked that up with that. Like, it's not like I did it on purpose, but it also wasn't professional and wasn't showing much responsibility at my first time and whatever. And so that really hit me hard, and it affected me on that tour big time.
Yeah. And obviously kind of with the 2005 thing as well, looming over, giving you a nice chance, the old saying, fool me once, shame on you, fool me twice, shame on me sort of scenario. Right. And I mean, you did play a few games after that, obviously a couple of tours. My first tour with the national team, my first and only tour with the national team, you were there as well. The funny story about me is I had all that trouble with under 19. I didn't really have to wait. I had all this trouble with under 19. I'm supposed to have a hearing. Instead, a week after we come back from New Zealand, I get a text message from Zubin Sarkari, again, player rep at that time, saying, can you fly to Dubai tomorrow? ? Now, on iPhone and WhatsApp, you can see that somebody's read the message. So he sees that I read the message, but I haven't responded yet. Instead, he types back, yes for Canada, stop smiling. And so he knew I read it. And obviously I was like, yeah, hell yeah. Of course I'm fine. Fly out. And my first tour, I mean, I wasn't expecting to play a game. I ended up playing a game against Kenya. I'll still remember this. My scenario was, we're getting warmed up. We're at the ground like 2 hours or 3 hours before the game. We watched one game coming in. At that time, I had really bad ankles. So a recurring theme you'll hear from me over and over again is the amount of injuries I've had. I don't think to this day I've ever played a game where I haven't been injured or where I've been 100 at full 100%. I need to get my ankles taped. Waiting, Davo's on the table. Waiting, Billy's on the table. Barney's on the table. Ash is on the table. This guy's on the table. Let's go. Finally, everybody goes out. Now I'm like, Gio, do whatever you can. Wrap it up quickly. I wasn't there for when they announced that I would be receiving my first cap. I wasn't even in the team huddle. I was inside the change room trying to get my ankles taped. Then I go out, Ash gives me a lecture, Davo gives me a lecture, and I'm like, fuck, I'm fucked. Didn't end up being a great game for us. We used six bowlers in the first six overs. Everybody went for 8 to 9 runs and over. I went for 12. So yeah, that's my story of the first call-up. And with that, I think we should wrap it up here. Shady, any last words before we sign off?
No, not really. I think there's been a lot of excitement around this podcast, and it's kind of been nice to just sort of shoot the shit a little bit and kind of what we wanted to do in the first place. Again, like we're in our element of sort of having fun and chirping and bantering and stuff. And so that's kind of how the cookie crumbles. Sometimes people don't agree with other people's opinions, and that's why it's a sort of a free country and stuff like that. So we're never looking to go sort of over the line with anything. But we're always looking to be as honest as possible. And anyone who has certain topics of discussion that they'd like us to talk about. If anybody feels like they want to come on the podcast, maybe like reach out to us. We love the feedback. You know, don't be shy and don't swim with your t-shirt on.
Absolutely, I couldn't agree more, man. And at the end of the day, I think between you and I, the only thing we've ever wanted is good cricket. We push good cricket, good competitive, healthy cricket over anything else. Biggest supporters of those that do that, but we want the best for everybody, and we want the best. So we don't mean any harm. But and like Shahid said, if there's anything that you disagree with, if there's a topic that you want to come on and discuss on the podcast, let us know. You can find us on Instagram at Dropped Again, on Facebook at Dropped Again, on Twitter at Dropped _ Again. Shoot us a note, shoot us a message, and let us know. And also, don't forget to rate, review, subscribe. You can find us on Apple, on Spotify, or at droppedagain.buzzsprout.com.
Zabardast, yar!
And there you go. And that's been Shahid Keshvani. I'm Arslan Kadir. And as always, thank you for listening, and we'll see you next time. Adios.
Peace.